Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Welcome to Soul to Soul right here on 101.9 Chai FM. I'm your host, Rabbi Ari Kiveman. And with me here today for the next inspiring and thought-provoking, should I say heartwarming hour, right here, live in the studio, or at least a Zoom across oceans coming into the studio. Well, usually I'm here alone in the studio, schmoozing with you, maybe sharing a l'chaim with a microphone. But today we are crossing over all the way. I'm not alone. We're never alone. But we're crossing over to Germany. Yes, Germany. And we have a remarkable rabbi, a man whose very presence in that part of the world is a living testimony to Jewish resilience, faith, and rebirth. And ladies and gents, please join me in welcoming Rabbi Yitzchak Wagner, who is the shliach of the Rebbe to the city Krefeld. Is that correct? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, you made a very good job. Even though most people can't pronounce it correctly, if it's hard for you, I always say you can call it Kreplach. Very
Kreplach.
Similar.
All right, either Kreplach or Krefeld, as long as we don't mess it too much. Krefeld, Germany. And Rabbi Wagner, welcome to Soul to Soul, where we're here every afternoon. There's great Jewish radio in South Africa, and we can't wait to welcome you in person. Please, God, in 2 weeks' time. In fact, I'd like to tell all our listeners that in 2 weeks' time, you're welcome to meet Rabbi Wagner in person. He's going to be speaking at the Holocaust and Genocide Center here in Johannesburg, and you'll get to hear his story in person. But for today, let's begin our discussion. How are you today, Rabbi Wagner?
Baruch Hashem, everything great. Thank you for having me. And I'm amazed that you have such a great radio show. I didn't hear about it here in Germany before I went to the website and I take a look. And I'm amazed that you can drive on the wrong side in South Africa. You know that we have the wheel on the other side and you can listen to a Jewish radio show. It's amazing. I wish we had something like this here in Germany.
Well, you'll discover when you come in person, South Africa has the best kept secrets of the Jewish world by far. But it's really great to have you here. And it's truly surreal to be chatting across continents like this. You're there in Germany. I imagine the weather's probably, I haven't checked, but I imagine it's probably not as warm as it is here in sunny Johannesburg. And yet, Klal Yisrael, we're all chaverim, we're all one family. And for our listeners,
The most crazy thing is that we both have the same time right now.
Yeah, that's so far away. Well. Yeah. You're probably changing it soon. We don't change the time here.
Once the Shabbos, we're going to change it.
Awesome. I'm glad we're on the same wavelength for the moment. But it should be easier for your travel. You don't have that time zone much of a difference. And for all our listeners, if you want to join our conversation, then you could send through your questions or comments right here to the studio. Send it on the SMS line or WhatsApp me. And we'll try to read your messages throughout the show and get your own participation. But let's start, Rabbi Wagner, let's start with a big question. After everything that happened during the Shoah, the unimaginable devastation, my own father was there after the Shoah. He grew up in the 1930s and 40s in Russia, as many Lubavitcher Hasidim did, and came afterwards. And I got to hear little bits and pieces. How's it possible for Jews to live in Germany today? What brings Jews back? Maybe tell us your own story. What brought you there? What keeps you there? From your accent, it sounds like you're born there or grew up there. Let's hear about it.
That's a great question. To answer the question, what are Jews doing today in Germany, you can make two lectures about it. The first lecture could be like a very economic lecture. And the second one could be one on Kabbalah. Let me give you two short answers. Most of the Jews today are from the former Soviet Union. Let's say in our community, I would say it's nearly 98% of our Jews are Russian background, Russian speaking.
That's very interesting.
After the perestroika.
You know, I visited, I went to Russia for Pesach, you know, I was part of the Chabad rabbinic training, and that was 25 years ago, and many of the Russian Jews of the small village I was in were moving to Germany, and that was interesting to me. I would have thought they'd be moving to Israel, so I'd love to hear your insights on that.
The perestroika after Soviet Russia collapsed, starting, let's say, whatever, 86, around this, 89, The Jews of the former Soviet Russia had three big opportunities where to go. They could go to Israel, and many did, Baruch Hashem. They could go to the United States, and it seems that many left right away to Brighton Beach. And you could come to Germany. So why Germany was very appealing for many Jews was that the German government in those days, they understood that this is a golden opportunity to bring Jewish life back to Germany after what happened here. So they made it very, very easy, very convenient. And I would say from the three options, not coming from a religious perspective, like coming from an economic perspective, Germany is the best option because it has a very strong social system. It has a very strong medical system. It's helping all the people. You get money and you get much more support, 10 times more support than you would get in the United States or in Israel. So this made it very appealing for many Jews to choose Germany. This is like the economic answer. And then there's like more the Hasidic answer, the Kabbalistic answer. And we know already from the Baal Shem Tov from before even that in this world, nothing happens chance. You know, even every leaf which falls from a tree where it lands, it's by divine providence, meaning that God is behind it. And there is no that something happens without a deeper reason behind it. So if God is sending thousands and thousands, 200,000 Jews from one place to the other place, there must be a bigger, deeper meaning than just, you know, you get more money than you get in a different country. I love history. I just have the problem that I can't remember numbers so good, but I love history in general. And Germany has something very special in Jewish history. If you study Jewish history, you will see a pattern that in most places, listen carefully, in most places where there was a very strong Jewish community for a long time, once they got kicked out, they never came back, or if they came back, they never came back in the same big numbers as before. Let's take some examples. For example, Babylonia. You know, the Talmud was written over there, and the big yeshivot, and Judaism was developed there. And
we still study the Babylonian Talmud for the most part.
Yeah, every day. And today, how many Jews, once they got kicked out, came back to Babel? Okay. Second example, Spain, the golden ages of Spain. Abarbanel, you know, he was the king's highest Jew over there. And so many Jews lived in Spain and for so many years and so good. And once they got kicked out, they never came back. I mean, today there are Jewish communities in Spain, but you can't compare to what was in Spain in the Golden Ages before they got kicked out. Poland. How many Jews lived in Poland? What's going on in Poland today? You have little communities here and there, but you can't compare to what was in Poland before the war. And Germany, the Jews got kicked out in Germany a couple of times, and they always come back to Germany, and they always come back in big numbers to Germany. So why are the Jews sticking to this crazy country of Germany?
It's a good question. I'm going to jump in for a second, Rabbi Wagner. We got to take a quick station break, but I'll be right back to that story because you got us sitting at the edge of our seats to hear, and I'm curious myself.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back to Soul to Soul right here on 101.9 Chai FM. I'm your host, Rabbi Ari Kiveman, and it's great to be with you here this wonderful afternoon. We're continuing our fascinating conversation with Rabbi Yitzchak Wagner, joining us live from Krefeld, Germany. And ladies and gents, I just want to take this moment to invite you to hear Rabbi Wagner in person. He's coming out to talk to us on the anniversary of Kristallnacht. I think this year, 79 years since Kristallnacht. And the question is... what is that?
87.
Sorry, 87 years. My maths are not very good today. And he's the first rabbi to return to the German city of Krefeld in over 70 years. And he describes the deep struggles that have contributed to the amazing resilience of Jewish life in Germany today. So we'll continue our conversation here. And you're welcome to hear Rabbi Wagner and to see him in person live Thursday, the 6th of November at 7:45 p.m. We'll be at the Johannesburg Holocaust and Genocide Center, and we'd love to invite you to come and join us in person. Rabbi Wagner, you were in the middle of telling us about what brought the Jews back to Germany. They haven't returned to Spain. I don't blame them. They haven't returned to Babylonia. What is it about Germany?
So the Hasidic or more mystical explanation and answer would be that when Hashem created the world, he did hit some special godly sparks in the physical world. And one of the tasks of the Jewish people is to go all over the world and find those sparks and redeem them and bring them back. And this is helping bringing Moshiach and bringing the Geula, as we said, how do you say Geula in English?
Redemption to the world.
Yeah, to bring the redemption. And it seems that many of those godly sparks were hidden in Germany. And that's one of the bigger, deeper reasons why Hashem is sending the Jews over here. How do we redeem those godly sparks in doing good deeds, in doing deeds of love, of mitzvot, fulfilling a mitzvah with a physical object, taking a table, as I'm sitting on a table in the synagogue right now talking to you, and I have my Talmud open before me and I'm learning, so I'm taking out a godly energy in the table and bringing it back to Hashem. And there are some special godly energies hidden in the world, and it's important for us to find them. And it seems that God is not it seems that's the fact that God is sending the Jews in those to those spaces where those godly sparks can be found. And that's one of the deeper reasons why he's sending Jews back, or sending Jews to Germany, because these are the last sparks to we need to find in order to bring the redemption.
Very, very interesting. And that's incredibly powerful, because, you know, I've actually been to Germany myself a couple of years ago. The Johannesburg Jewish Male Choir, we all sang in Berlin at the Lewandowski Music Festival. It was an incredible experience. And standing there, you know, wearing a yarmulke, singing Jewish liturgy in a place that once tried to erase Jewish life, it was overwhelming. But it's fascinating that the German government themselves had actually funded and sponsored our trip to come out there. And I'll never forget watching the giant menorah lighting. We were there over Hanukkah, that the menorah lighting was taking place at the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin. The same gate where Hitler, Yamach Shema, once marched. And I remember thinking, the same stones that witnessed the darkest night of our people and now glow with the light of Hanukkah. You know, what a powerful symbol of the Jewish spirit. We don't just survive, we thrive, we shine brighter.
Do you know what? This is Germany. So when Chabad of Berlin made this idea to have the big Chanukiah by the Brandenburger Gate, they checked the old videos and they checked the old pictures, and they made sure that the Chanukiah should be on the exact spot where Hitler, Yamach Shemo, was standing. And we're in Germany, so we make sure it's really the right spot. And that's the spot where the Chanukiah is, where Hitler was making his speeches of hate. And today, so much light is coming from this spot.
That's unbelievable. You know, that was the Rebbe's point of putting these public menorahs this place. Obviously, it's a mitzvah to do Pirsumei Nisa, and we invite the community to join us for our giant menorah lightings, but that's still a good 6-7 weeks away to Hanukkah. But that was certainly an incredible experience being there and seeing that. And the Rebbe's purpose of sending shluchim around the world, he started that mission right after the Holocaust that he himself endured and experienced and lost family in, and said, whereas the Nazis, Yamach Shemam, hate, chase down every Jew in hate, we're going to find every Jew and empower them with love and with light. So I'm curious, do you feel that same sense of contrast when you walk the streets of Germany? And I'm looking at you here, obviously a proud Jew, a visible shliach, wearing your kippah, your beard, your tzitzis with pride. How does that feel, walking in the streets of a place where once people were persecuted for that?
I mean, we get used to it. It's not that I'm walking on the street every time and I'm thinking about the past, but sometimes we get the environment reminds us of how special it is that we walk the way we walk. And one of the questions I'm getting very often is how do people react seeing you dressed with a hat and a beard and the tzitzis, and my son is wearing the kippah and the children are dressed that you can see that they are Jewish. And I must tell you, from at least in my town, from 10 times that somebody stops me because the way we look, 9 times is positive. And this happens every week. It's not every month, it's every week. Last time was just like 3-4 days ago that people stop us and they tell us, you know, I'm sorry to stop you, but I just want to express my feelings, how happy I am to see that your son is wearing a kippah on the streets. Have a nice day. And this is happening very, very many, many times. But I must tell you that I remember the first time when I became the rabbi in 2008 on the way to Tashlich. You know, we go to a river and we make a special prayer over there. We don't have a river next to the community, so we had like a 20-minute walk to a park. And we walked in a group of minyan, was of religious people. You know, we had a chazan from Israel, his brother, some friends, some people became already religious in Krefeld. Everybody with a beard. They never saw a scene like this since the times of Napoleon Bonaparte in our town. So I remember it was a rainy day and there was a street and it had a curve and somebody was driving his Volkswagen a little bit too fast. And I could see he was looking at us again and again and again. He couldn't believe his eyes seeing a minyan walking and he crashed. He crashed from the street and he crashed into a tree. Baruch Hashem, we made sure nothing happened to him, but this was like our first experience. So in general, people are looking. People are not used to seeing religious people, but it's I have a lot of positive experiences made here in Krefeld.
That's good. I had that same sentiment and experience and feeling when I was there as well, only positive. But do you ever feel the opposite? You mentioned, you know, 1 out of 10 times is not great. Do you ever feel unsafe or a sense of hostility, or is the atmosphere changing in any way, especially since the 7th of October?
We all have the same thing. Most of the times, it's somebody driving in a car and he screams in Arabic, Yahud, Yahud. You know, for me, it's a compliment that he calls me Yahud, you know, and I tell to my children, you know, it's good, you know, that he sees we're Jewish. That's nice. You know, we try to sing a song or a niggun if he drives by. It has a bad taste, but it doesn't happen that often, Baruch Hashem. So anti-Semitism, I really, in this sense that I felt afraid, I never felt. But I tell you in a short story where I felt real anti-Semitism. I was invited as a representative of the Jewish community to an exhibition called Lawyer Without Law. This was an exhibition about Jewish lawyers in the times before the Shoah, a little bit before the Shoah, where the Germans took away their right to be a lawyer. And it had big pictures of those Jewish lawyers and their stories and invited just lawyers, judges, and me as a representative of the Jewish community. So no hooligans, no Nazis and all of this, no Hamas. And I'm standing there reading one of the texts over there. Next to me is standing a lawyer in his suit, and he reads the text as well. And he turns to me and says, you know, what the Nazis did to the Jews, you know, was horrible, but must tell you what you are doing to the Palestinians is the same thing. So this is the real anti-Semitism I feel. To have the chutzpah, and this is somebody not stupid, you know, you should be an educated person, he's a lawyer, to take the Holocaust and put it on the same scale as the Middle Eastern conflict. This is the real anti-Semitism I felt. So it's not these are the things where I feel anti-Semitism. Yeah.
And this was a German fellow, this lawyer?
Yeah, sure. This was a German fellow. I had another story where I made a lecture to non-Jews about kosher. And then I explained how much goes into an order that you have a product kosher. You know, I have a mashgiach here, somebody who's checking the food. And somebody said, okay, so this means that the kosher stuff is much more expensive than the non-kosher stuff. So I said, yeah, it could be that the product is double price if it's kosher because so much work goes into it. And another old woman stands up and she goes, like, yeah, but that's no problem because the Jews are all rich. Oh, I wish she would be right. But coming from anti-Semitism, she didn't mean bad. Right. She didn't want to offend me. It just came out like, but it's normal. All the Jews are rich. This is the anti-Semitism I feel sometimes between the lines. Yeah.
So I think there are two contrasting stories. On the one hand, you see a blatant anti-Semitism. And I feel, in a sense, perhaps even whitewashing. You know, maybe they were waiting for this opportunity to be able to justify the Holocaust and to say, to excuse it. And that's inexcusable. 100%. You know, they I'm sure many of them feel good that now they could, that the whole world accuses the Jews allegedly of genocide. But, you know, unfortunately, in the second story that you mentioned, many Jewish, well, first of all, you know, I could take a taxi here or anywhere in the world, and oftentimes people have that sentiment. Halavai, we were all rich, and I guess we're rich in many ways spiritually, and hopefully that has its impact financially as well. But as a rabbi in the community, I know all too well how our work is necessary to be helping people financially, and there are many people in our community who are struggling and are destitute, and therefore, you know, our Chabad Seniors program, every day we feed dozens of senior citizens. Every Friday we send food parcels to lonely seniors for Shabbos food, and we know there's many other wonderful organizations in our community who help those who are less fortunate than ourselves, and there's plenty of Jews that way, and many who don't understand why the cost of kosher is significantly higher, but as you explained, there's a requirements, a process, there's a mashkiach, the supervision that's necessary in order to ensure that it's kosher, and that obviously comes at a cost. The mashkiach needs to support their family as well.
Yeah.
How many Jewish people do you have in Germany altogether, and perhaps in Krefeld in particular?
Oh, it's difficult. In Krefeld, I always say we have 770. So that's how many Jews we have in our community in general. It's something over 200,000, I think, in Germany. But now we got, like, with the war in Russia against Ukraine, we got more Jews, new Jewish refugees coming, running away from the war to the Jewish communities here, because Germany opened right away the gates and said, every Jew who needs to run away, please come to our country and we'll help you.
That's very interesting. So now with all these, with 200 to 300,000 Jews in Germany, what kind of Jewish infrastructure do you have? Do you have shuls and schools and kosher restaurants and supermarkets and mikvahs and everything that a Jewish community should have?
Our Jewish community, Baruch Hashem, we have like a big shul I'm sitting in right now. We have a Jewish kindergarten. By the way, it's a German word, yeah, preschool. We are in the town next by, it's called Düsseldorf. It's just 25 minutes drive. There's a Jewish preschool, a Jewish high school. We have a restaurant in our community. Unfortunately, not every day, but on Thursdays, and basically that's it. So what's an issue is more the religious education, the religious chinuch. There we have a yeshiva in Berlin, but Berlin is far away. It's like 6 hours drive from Krefeld, but still my son is attending the yeshiva over there in Berlin very proudly.
Well, it's good that we have Jewish pride with yeshivas, and hearing you talk about walking the streets with Jewish pride, it's something that's incredible and necessary. And it's a Kiddush Hashem. It's a declaration that Am Yisrael Chad, the Jewish people, are alive, and especially in a place where they tried to decimate us. But listening to you also gives me a certain sense for our own listeners here in Johannesburg to appreciate what we have, because I think our community in Johannesburg is probably not more than 20,000, 25,000 Jews. I may stand corrected if somebody wants to send me the correct number, but that's the latest statistics I've seen. And yet we have more than a dozen kosher places to eat. We have so many Jewish institutions, schools and shuls and community centers and Hatzalah and Chavri Kadisha and the community security organizations and our Chai FM radio. So I think we have a lot to be proud of here, of what our community has built up over the years. And we have a community that's certainly a beacon of light. And we invite Rabbi Wagner to come see it for himself in 2 weeks' time, and to bring back the inspiration of the South African Jewish community to Germany to spread that light.
Great. I did already my Google research and I was very impressed.
Good. I'm glad you got a preparation, and certainly the community is getting acquainted with you here as well. Maybe you could tell us more about Jewish life in your community in Krefeld today. What it's like?
What it's like, every day is different, as every shliach, as every rabbi. Now I have some quiet time, which is good, because we can do the interview, and I'm doing some learning. I'm doing some learning programs. In general, it's preparing shiurim, teaching children, giving classes. Unfortunately, tomorrow we have a very, very difficult funeral to do. Somebody very young passed away, and we're running the Chevra Kadisha, the society, the burial society, who needs to make the tara, the washing of the body. This is something which will come up, unfortunately, tomorrow. And then we are getting ready for Shabbos, which is like always the highlight everywhere in the world. Baruch Hashem, it's Shabbos. You know, the famous song from Yaakov Shvecki, I'm sure
Baruch
you play
Hashem,
it sometime.
It's Shabbos. Maybe Craig will play it for us soon.
We have a museum in our community, and we have non-Jewish people coming to our museum to show them about, speak to them about the Shoah, the Holocaust, about the seven laws of Noah, and about Judaism. And I'm showing the video of Shveki to tell them what is Shabbos, because it's so nice video and everybody loves it. And yeah, we're getting ready, Baruch Hashem. Will be Shabbos tomorrow.
Well, I can't wait to meet with you in person, because then we could share some notes. The sites for the Johannesburg Holocaust and Genocide Center, where your main talk is going to take place. There, we are also planning a Chabad museum here, less so a museum, an inspirational center. We call it the Goodness and Kindness Center, which will be based at our shul in Sandton. And that's about similar to your idea of sharing the seven Ohad laws. We want to share with the world and with the greater community. There are millions of wonderful people in this country who could learn Judaism's universal message based on the seven Ohad laws, very relevant to the Parsha this week and today's Torah portion in particular.
Yep.
So that's really incredible. We'd love to hear more about that, and perhaps how that's influenced your community life. And, you know, you talk about teaching or even the way that you approach Yiddishkeit. I think that will be interesting for our listeners to hear more about that. So maybe you want to share just a little bit about what kind of classes and who attends. Is it only Jewish people? Do you have Gentiles who come? And what people are interested in learning from you?
So I give a class in Sefer Chinuch every day, which is like amazing. Art Scroll brought out the Sefer Chinuch, and I can use it to prepare my class. And we go through all the mitzvahs of the Torah with a deeper explanation. And for non-Jewish people, again, it's this tours. Like every week, sometimes three times groups. It was thousands and thousands of people in the last years. I took through the community. I showed them the museum. By now, I showed them also a short video on the 7th of October, because it's our part of fighting against this wave of anti-Semitism and wave of propaganda, which Hamas spread in the news. And we want to show our perspective. We have a little exhibition on the 7th of October, and for sure on the Holocaust. And these are basically the main topics we are talking. And then in general, Judaism, you know, showing the synagogue, what's the mezuzah, what's the bima, how the siddur works. And that's basically what we teach to the public as well.
Well, that's incredible. You certainly got us very interesting to hear. We're going to take a quick ad break. And when we come back, when I ask you more about the incredible Jewish life that you got there in Krefeld, Germany, and Germany in general, we'll be right back in a moment.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back to Soul to Soul, writing on 101.9 Chai FM. I'm your host, Rabbi Ari Kiv, and I'm still right here in our Johannesburg studio on a sunny, beautiful day. And joining us live all the way from Krefeld, Germany, is Rabbi Yitzchak Wagner. Rabbi, thanks for staying with us here. And let's continue our conversation. Perhaps you want to share with us a story that stands out, maybe a moment of transformation, of connection, or hashkacha pratis, divine providence, that you've experienced in your shlichus, in your rabbinic work in Germany.
One story which comes to mind is, years ago, I'm sitting in my office and my phone rings. On the other line is a person who introduces himself with those words, Rabbi Wagner, I'm sorry to disturb you. It might sound a bit crazy to you, but I'm an undertaker. And I'm in my car, and I have a casket in the back. And it's a person who died without any family. And I'm on the way to crematoria. The body should be burned. And I'm standing by a red light by a crossing, and I have his paperwork on the seat next to me. So I'm going through it in order to see who I'm delivering to the crematoria. And I see that his name sounds very Jewish. His name was Shimon Cohen. And my wife, some weeks ago, she was in one of the groups you took through the Jewish community, and she asked a question. She said that her husband is an undertaker, and she asked how Judaism sees burial. And she told me that in Judaism, to burn a body is the worst thing, not just because of Auschwitz. In general, you know, it's unbelievable to burn somebody, and it's very, very important to get buried on a Jewish cemetery. So now I see this name, and Shimon Cohen sounds Jewish. Perhaps there's a mistake. So I told him, wow, for sure, it's a huge mistake. Make a U-turn and bring him back to the funeral home. And we made very shortly a discussion here in the community. And 2 days or a day later, he was buried on our Jewish cemetery with a tara, with a ritual washing in the Jewish clothes, burial clothes, and came to our Jewish cemetery. Later, I did found out that this person, Shimon Cohen, had a sister. She was 97 years old in London in an old age house. And I got her on the phone and she told me that they were both survivors from Auschwitz. And after the war, for whatever reason, he ended up in Germany. He told nobody about his Judaism. He was in an old age house. He died over there and he was on the way to be burned in Germany, according to the law. And just because I was speaking about, you know, Jewish burial to the wife of the undertaker and he saw it's a Jewish name and he didn't change the name, you know, how much it helped him in Germany, like 10 meters away from the crematorium. We stopped it, and you can visit his grave today on our Jewish cemetery.
Wow, that's incredible hashgacha practice, divine providence. And you know, it's not, we have to pay attention and be aware in our lives about these miracles, or sometimes it doesn't appear to be a miracle, but even these small coincidences are Hashem's personal handwriting in our lives. Rabbi, I want to zoom out for a moment, no pun intended, because you're joining us here on Zoom, but I want to ask something broader. Do you think the world can learn something from Germany's transformation since the Shoah, especially in light of what's happening in the situation in Israel today and since the ceasefire, etc.? How do you see parallels or differences in how nations face their moral responsibilities? If you take, for an example, our government here in South Africa, unfortunately, is hostile towards the Israeli government. Although I must say, as a Jewish community, I think we are very privileged and feel very welcome here. That I can differentiate here between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. Although I think in much of the world there is no difference, it's the same. But to some degree, maybe others will disagree with me on that. But I personally, the way I see it, I'm going to put this out there before giving you the chance to answer, is, you know, I have family and friends all over the world. We are a global Jewish community. And I see in many parts of, you know, the German government, as an example, is very friendly to Israel. They're philo-Semitic since for very many decades already. Whereas the South African government seems to be more hostile towards Israel. But on the streets of Johannesburg, we thank God do not experience anti-Semitism. And while you haven't encountered it too much, it does exist on the streets of Germany and certainly in many other parts of Europe and the United States and other parts of the world. So I'm curious to hear your take on that.
That's an amazing question. Let me answer like this. I have four kids, Blenara, one son, and he is, by now he's 11 years old. When he was 9 years old, he was crazy for soccer. We're in Germany. I don't know how it's in South Africa.
Yes, here
what
too.
Sport you?
Rugby, cricket,
okay.
But soccer is on the top. At least for my
kids.
He
was crazy for soccer, especially for the German team. So he nicked so much until he would get his tricot. You know, his, how is a tricot in English? His, you know, what they wear.
The jersey. I know what you mean. The uniform. Yep.
He needed to have the German team uniform. And then it hit me like a bomb. I'm looking at my child, 9 years old, with a kippah and tzitzit hanging out from the dress of the German team. And when they sing the German song, everybody has to be quiet. He needs to see it because he is the biggest fan of the German team. Wow, this is Germany. The Germany, the country where the Shoah came from. What did this country do that 2024, 5, 26, you have a Jewish, proud Jewish child with a kippah, tzitzis, who is proudly supporting the German team. You know what they did? It's called education. After the war, it's not like the war was over and everybody loved the Jews. It took years and years and years of Holocaust education, of taking schools to see Auschwitz, to go to Dachau, to see the concentration camps, to speak about it, to see Schindler's List as an obligation when you come into a German school, you have to see, to read the book of Anne Frank, to face what happened in the Holocaust. It didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen in 10 years, in 20 years, but 87 years since 9th of November 38, Kristallnacht, the night of the broken glass, Germany made a huge transformation of a friend of Israel, of a supporter of the Jewish community through education. When we see the hate which is going on in Gaza, everybody heard this phone call, you know, where he's calling his parents, I killed 10 Jews, you know, open the WhatsApp, you know. This hate is not normal. This hate is unbelievable. Where is all this hate coming from? Because they teach hate in school, in kindergarten, in preschool. They have public parties where they cut off heads of teddy bears, you know, which where Israel uniform. If you stop all of this and you bring good teachers and you start in kindergarten teaching peace and teaching coexistence and teaching the values of life, it won't happen in 10 years, in 20 years. But Germany did it, and Besrat Hashem, that's our prayer. It can happen all over the world, that perhaps it will take many, 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 many years, but there will be a time that also the people in Gaza will celebrate when Maccabi Tel Aviv wins the game.
That's such an important point. And maybe Germany shows that even after immense darkness, a people or a country can choose to face truth and rebuild with integrity. And the story about your son wearing his team's jersey with pride, you know, that's not something I know many Holocaust survivors wouldn't have walked into a German car, into Mercedes or Volkswagen. Perhaps that's also a message for us Jews, that from destruction can come renewal, that every Churban contains the seeds of Geula, of redemption. We'll be right back in a moment. We got to reconnect with Rabbi Wagner, and we'll be back in a moment.
Chai FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Ladies and gents, welcome back to Soul to Soul right here on 101.9 Chai FM. You're tuned into Soul to Soul with, I'm your host, Rabbi Ari Kiveman, and we're continuing our inspiring conversation with Rabbi Yitzchak Wagner, live from Germany. Rabbi Wagner, before we got disconnected, you were telling us about life in Germany, about the Jewish pride that your family has there. And before we wrap up the show, which will be in a couple of minutes, maybe you just want to share with us some closing thoughts. You've been traveling the world. Maybe you got some interesting stories. Maybe you want to tell us about your own life growing up in Germany. You got a couple of more minutes here. And to inspire or to share with everyone, you have inspired us already. And I'm sure more people want to come hear you in person. So maybe some closing thoughts before we end today's show.
So I can close up by just telling you how inspired I am by this radio show, you know, with all the ads and the bakery and the people who are supporting everything. And that's just amazing. We have to do a radio show like this. And I can imagine how much time goes into doing such a radio show. It's not like Chick Chuck. This is a serious business. And I've never been to South Africa before. We don't know that much about South Africa. I mean, everybody knows about Nelson Mandela. We know about the World Cup, I guess, which was in South Africa. We know it's beautiful over there, and we know there's a problem of crime a little bit. That's what the Germans know about South Africa, at least about what people know, like on the now on the street. And I see that you have a huge Holocaust, or you have a Holocaust museum over there where will be the lecture, and I'm looking forward very, very much to spread the message that we can learn from each other. And the nice thing is, wherever I'm traveling in the world, and for the last 15 years I did 38 states in America, now it's getting more difficult, like Hawaii, Alaska. Our community became like a mix of everything inspirational I see all over the world. I bring it back to Germany and I try to implement it in our community. So I'm really looking forward to see what I'm going to bring from South Africa and what I can bring from Germany to South Africa, besides some beer.
Biltong. You got to try some Biltong. We'll treat you to some of South Africa's delicacies that are unique, but you certainly are a beacon of light. And it's just speaking with you, I mean, if this goes afterwards onto YouTube, you could see the shining light of Rabbi Wagner. And I really want to give everyone the chance to meet you in person. And please God, I think the community there is definitely blessed to have you as the Or LaGoyim, the beacon of light there, truly representing the eternity of our people. And before we wrap up, it's a quick reminder to all of our listeners that you'll get a chance to meet with Rabbi Yitzchak Wagner in person right here in Johannesburg in just 2 weeks' time on Thursday, November 6th at the Johannesburg Holocaust and Genocide Center for a very special Kristallnacht commemoration. It's going to be a deeply meaningful evening, and I want to encourage everybody to make sure to book early and join us for what promises to be an unforgettable event of light overcoming darkness, and certainly a lot of darkness in the world that needs to be overcome. And you don't want to miss this opportunity. In fact, we're almost sold out already. So book your tickets now. You can book on the Chabad South Africa website, and we encourage everyone to book as soon as possible. Rabbi Wagner, well, I'm very grateful that you joined us here on the show today, and thank you so much for joining us on Soul to Soul. Your courage, your warmth, your vision, it's an inspiration to all of us, and we can't wait to meet you in person. And to all of our listeners, thank you for spending this hour with us. Remember, wherever you are, whatever your story, your soul has a song, and it's worth sharing. So until next time, I'm Rabbi Ari Kiefman, reminding you to live inspired, to live connected, to always live soul to soul, and to join us each week right here on our Soul to Soul 101.9 Chai FM. Remember the past, live the present, and trust the future. Chazak v'yamatz, carpe diem, seize every moment, and remember to aspire to inspire before you retire so you don't expire. Shabbat shalom.